Hey guys, welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast.
Jackson, thanks for dressing up for the podcast.
I came fresh from school.
You. I appreciate you looking
Look, guys, I had to go build a set of stairs this morning.
You look good.
I was comfortable. Yeah. So, yeah, thank you.
Are those pajamas?
Listen, lady, okay? we're here.
What in the world?
What do you mean, what in the world? This is my birthday. Okay, I can do whatever I want.
It is your birthday. It's his birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yes.
How old are you? Six?
Right. No, I'm kidding. I dress like it. My Hot Wheels t-shirt's back at home. But welcome back. We are here at a new project to this podcast. But if you follow Brent, you've probably seen this before. This is, we call it the Hanover House. It's a better, is that the nickname?
The Joseph House.
Joseph House, all right. Yeah. So this is actually three houses in one.
Correct.
And Nathan, you know, I'm just going to pass it over to you because you you're living and breathing this thing. And
Nathan Michael Burry's project manager? So Michael Burry's second year instructor and Jackson's instructor this year. Nathan's been helping put this house together.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So the original house was built in 1725 by a person named Joseph House. So we call it the Joseph House House. And then in 1836, it went through a major remodel. They gutted it. They moved the original structure 90 degrees and made a new front facade, which we can see here behind us, and kind of turned it more into a Greek Revival sort of aesthetic. So, about 4 years ago, Michael and his business partner got word that they were going to tear this down and throw it away. And they scrambled and were able to keep the property, dismantle it, and then buy this piece of land here. And we've been building it back up ever since.
So the modern addition is two-car garage
and in-law apartment upstairs. Yeah. And
it's part of this. And it's obviously Gothic Revival-ish kind of thing.
We're going Carpenter Gothic.
Basing
it off of like 1880s, 1890s-ish.
So we kind of have three houses here. So house number one is this section right here, and then it kind of lightning bolts back.
Yep.
House number two, and then now house number three zigs that other zag.
Yeah. So if you got, look at the windows, right? You've got the 12 over 12 here, 6 over 6, 2 over 2, which is, right? I mean, windows are a piece that kind of tells you the story of the house. You know, there it is.
The eyes into the soul of the house.
That's right. So, you know, that's your giveaway of what's happening. The new entry, new front facade is being built right now by your classmate.
That's right. Yep. They're building a pediment to go over top of that front facade. And
it'll be done in a 17 Georgian style kind of.
So 1725. Yeah. So it was really fun for me because in dismantling this house, we were able to find bits and pieces that they reuse for other things in the house. Like we found one of the front pilasters that they had sawn into three pieces and used as wall framing. But we were able to figure out that they were a pilaster and got the dimensioning off of that, which was, 10.5 inches, right? In another part of the house, as it was being used as an attic floorboard, there was a daisy wheel. And what that is a circle like laid out with a compass. And then you take your compass on any point around the circumference and start working your way around to get a daisy wheel. And so it was really cool to put that all together and realize that they used that daisy wheel to proportion the front entrance and do a lot of the proportioning around the house.
Which in 1725 was pretty sophisticated for just a craftsman in, outside of Boston to have that kind of skill set.
Was
great.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the way they've been designing houses and doing things for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So,
Cool. Well, we're going to walk through it.
Before we give the full, we're going to give you the full realtor's tour here today. So this is for sale. This house is going on the market sometime this fall.
So 4 bedrooms, 6 bath, 2-car garage. Yeah.
Comes with kitchen, a cobbler shed.
Yeah. Original cobbler shed. I mean, the craftsmanship in this house is, I mean,
excellent.
World class. I mean, it's just, it's that level of detail. We're going to show you the siding, the windows, the different things that are going on in this house. It's really, really special.
Yeah, it is.
Cool. Let's head inside.
All right.
Let's do it.
Thanks, Nathan. Appreciate it.
Yeah, sure thing.
So what we've got going on, and if you follow my channel, you'll know that I've been here three or four times. And so, but I want to show you that there's a great mix of what we'll see in this house of new modern construction along with historic detailing. For instance, you got an insulated slab there below and then granite stones on top, right? So that those granite stones would have been the original foundation. We've got a basement underneath that we'll see. You'll see it below and then those things. So that's kind of this authenticity piece. The siding, Jackson probably did some of this siding. This is scarf jointed siding. So you have these boards that are, 4 feet long.
Skived clapboards.
Go on.
They're skived clapboards. So they're radial sawn, but they normally would have been riven from, a piece. That's why you've got shorter runs of these clapboards. And then they're skived together, which they have this really cool jig that they had set up here where, you set your clapboard in it and then you took a plane to the end of it and you could only plane off just about this much.
They would have riven these clapboards out of a chunk of a log. You split it out radially. They would have just gone through with a froe and a maul and split it all out. A froe is an ancient tool. It's just this piece of iron with a stick on it and you bash it into the end of the log and you push it to and fro and split the wood down. And then we plane the claps with a hand plane, and then we set them in a shave horse, which is what Jackson was mentioning, a jig. And then we use a draw knife, which is a knife blade with two handles on either end of it, and you pull it towards you.
Oh, I was actually talking about the ones set up on the benches. I didn't realize those were done on a shave horse.
Yeah, those were.
What were the two where you could set them into the...
That was for planing.
Oh, that was just for planing. Oh, okay. I misunderstood. So these were done on a shave horse.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Did you go to North Midstream?
No.
Look at this, guys. See these lines in here? Okay. Austin, get in there. They've all been hand planed. Okay. Show me a house in America that has hand planed siding like this.
Yeah, that's not a museum. That's
new house.
New, yeah. Right? Yeah. They're face nailed. We've got nails going through the face of these boards. Again, we're talking about an historic way of building these things. These are tapered, okay? And they're short. My understanding was that there's a log and they took a saw, spun it, and then they break off the pieces.
For these, you basically set this log on lathe points, right? And then your saw will cut along the bottom and then rotate that half an inch and cut another kerf and then your clap will fall out of that.
Right.
So you're basically spinning the log around and taking a clap out of it.
So you, when you do that, you get a vertical grained piece of siding, which is the best orientation for the grain so that it's most stable. It's not going to warp and twist. And so, anyway,
so that's how all of these were cut out. What Nathan was describing about the fro, that's traditionally how you would have done this. Yep. You would have aligned your fro up, hit it down into the piece.
So that's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, yeah.
Right? But in 1725, there would have been a sawmill around here, you would have thought, right?
Certainly in 1725, there were sawmills around.
So,
but it was still, labor was cheaper than materials at that point still. Yeah. So if you were buying... They didn't necessarily have a efficient way to cut clap via sawmill at that point. So splitting them out still would have been the most economical.
The other thing, just the build science of this thing, is what I love, is that you'll see this fiber wood material back here.
Then you'll Timber see, HP.
What is it called?
Timber HP out of Maine.
Yeah. So it's a wood fiber.
It is.
Waterproof.
Yeah.
And you've got 2 inches of it.
Yeah,
looks like. Then you've got your water repellent barrier right here.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I'm always telling you guys that you should absolutely still use real wood, because when you put it with an air gap behind it, this stuff will last 100 years, 200 years, 300 years, last forever. Okay. Reason it doesn't is when they take the wood siding and put it directly against the zip board, and water gets trapped behind there. But in this system, because air can move back behind there, it lasts forever. Notice too, this little copper screen, that when these are nailed down on here, this little copper screen is turned up, and that keeps bugs from going up in there, right? I mean, a lot of cool little details here.
Yeah.
And then the last piece is these windows. We'll see them from the inside. We went and we got the YouTube video on him making these windows. Well, here they are in sight, and you've got timber framed, you know, parts and pieces. You can see the peg going through here. These are, and you'll see it on the inside, actually attached to the outside frame, which
they're called plank frame windows.
Plank frame windows, because they're actually hung on the outside of the frame of the house. So
if you can imagine it, the timber frame structure is there. So any piece of the timbers, the posts will be somewhere along here. And then you've got planks that are running along the sides of the house.
Vertically.
Yeah. And so you would just cut out a hole, and then you would stick the plank frame window right in the middle of it and drive these pintles into.
Yep.
And the plank framing was a cheaper, faster way to build.
Yeah.
Back then.
Yep.
So believe it or not. So anyway.
Pre-plywood.
So case in point with the clap lasting 300 years with that strip, the vertical strips behind it. My house, like when I was taking them off, I was surprised to find that this isn't a new technology.
Really?
They were 16th inch pieces of just probably scrap from the riving process, the 16 inch vertical strips on the house. And my claps are 300 years old.
Yeah.
Wow. So,
what wood are they?
White pine.
That's what this is too?
Yeah, this is all white pine. Yeah.
So that is popular.
Yeah, this is all the heartwood of white pine.
And this is a linseed oil paint?
This is, linseed oil paint from earth and flax.
Because even that'll help too.
Yeah.
Just the linseed oil will protect the wood, make it last a lot longer.
You paint all the backs?
It does get wet,
it dries out.
It should get wet,
So let's go around this way, because I mean, we've been here for 15 minutes and we haven't even gotten inside. Let's go, I'm gonna show you the front entry, that's the Greek Revival and why it's the Greek Revival. So this is a pretty typical Greek.
Just really quick, we lost Nathan. He's off to his daughter's recital, so.
He doesn't like us anymore.
He cares more about his daughter than he does us.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Some people have any excuse, you know?
So 1836, right? So if you think about the Greek Revival style, that's usually about 1830. The Second Bank of Philadelphia is a Greek Revival, one of the first Greek Revival buildings. It's about 1820. So 1836, you're in the heart of the Greek Revival era. And so what makes this Greek Revival, right? And you begin to, if you look at that molding at the top, that bed molding. What?
Is that called splayed? Like when it's like that?
Well,
it looks like.
It does, it is a splay. It's a, it's basically that it's one reason why Greek Revival works on modern styles is because it's so hard and sharp, and there's is not a lot of curves to it and stuff like that. But that little sharp angle, you see the same one in the capital of the column there, is just a typical Greek Revival molding. This opening is pretty typical of how they would do that with these side lights, and then the door that we'll see downstairs that has these really wide styles and rails. And so
you can also see a lot of the wide uninterrupted stuff. Like you're gonna see Greek Revival has a lot of long, big, wide friezes.
Yeah.
And just what you're saying about the styles and rails, even on the windows, it translates through wide, big, blank
columns. This is original.
Uh-huh. And so, that architrave right there with those kind of sharp lines, big, wide, fat frieze, angled moldings in the bed mold and going up.
Even the corona being as fat as it is, as much of an overhang as it is another sign.
Yeah. So we're, great detailing here, and we'll see more of that inside. You'll notice that our windows have changed. You see a lot of wavy glass in there, but you know, the look at the check rail, look at the size of the check rail on that size. And this size check rail here, the size of the mutton bars is thinner on this thing. And you'll see actually the shape of the mutton bars is different inside. So all these small little things that you know, help tell the story.
The joinery, still big pins.
Yeah.
Not necessarily as big as the pins on the other.
So what we're showing is that where these houses joined, where they added on the back. So that this front section was the 1725 house. This addition was on the back. You look at the top, the cornice.
Stopping here.
And it, the you see the corner board going up. You see those other railings dial into it. And then you see the bed mold, for instance, it changes in style. So you don't see the short siding pour. They're not scythed.
They're butted.
They're butted. So small little small little details
also
that I thought of all by myself. No, small little details. That
also copper versus
that. Yeah, the face nail in the big rose head nail. Right. I mean, just we're talking about all these little eighth of an inch. This is where I say like the difference between good and great is an eighth of an inch. It's all of these tiny little details that are, I think they matter. I think they're important.
And then moving over to the next house.
You know, and this is the modern addition. So this is the 1870s house. There's 1870s. True
board and batten,
right, with this decorative astragal, right, or batten that goes across there. The way they have pitched the top of the water table there so that profile kind of shines and shows, that same screen detailing is underneath here, so that too is held off the wood. You can see the battens up there above the garage doors. Yeah, so let's go inside. Great.
Wait,
stuff.
Really quick.
Oh,
cool detail.
Let's not go inside.
Cool detail on the Carpenter Gothic side. You can see those little clover patterns on each one of the little
brackets
that, what are they called? Outkick trefoils.
Trifoils.
Trifoils. So, the. Depends on where
you come from. In Texas, we call them a trifoil.
and even continued up just under the eaves of those.
Yeah. I love the lead cap you got over top of that. Is that copper or lead?
Lead. All right, now we can go inside.
Okay, my gosh.
You have permission.
All right, so we're on the main floor, right? Front door's right there for the original house. You would have come into this parlor on this side, I was told, and then the kitchen on the other side. Beautiful brickwork that you're seeing here. Remember, this house is only, 16 feet wide, right? It's not very wide here. This would have been the back wall with windows going out the back side. And then that addition was added on. And so, isn't that right?
Yeah. That's correct, yeah.
So that's the back wall. So it's not a huge house.
You have to that stairwell right there.
Yeah, essentially four rooms, right? This room, that room, and then the two rooms upstairs. Probably plenty in 1725, but small to our standards today. Beautiful fireplace. I was told that piece of granite there with the chiseled face is 1,000 pounds. It was quite a ordeal getting that thing in there. So
yes.
And then the other side is a cooking kitchen.
That's right. There's
oven.
A beehive oven. Put your bread inside of it and let it slow cook and nice rise out of it.
So these are the parts and pieces that Nathan was talking about when they found the pilasters for the front. And so you're looking at all of these things that were reused inside the house that when they took it apart, they're like, oh, wait, there's the pilaster. It was cut into three pieces, which is pretty cool. This is thought to be the panel that's going to go around this fireplace right over that granite. And you see them piecing in parts and pieces, the panel, the stiles and the rails, and rebuilding this thing,
staying as true to the original
as they can. Yeah. Look at the repairs to this beam here. This, put the bead on it going across there. I don't know what that, I think that's just shims, but rebuilding of that stuff, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, they must be boxing these out, which is why they've got a little thing there.
He's got his oven. You can see the hump on the back side there.
Beehive
which is pretty,
oven.
Pretty awesome. It's out of beehive. And then, here's our window, right? You're gonna see a wider mutton bar here. This is 12 over 12. This bottom sash operates, and would have been held up with a stick. Top sash would have been fixed in the frame. And so pretty awesome.
Very awesome. The fireplace there, that's like the kitchen fireplace. That is a massive fireplace, especially by standards of the time. That would have been a really, really big masonry mass, because that's essentially what you're trying to make out of these fireplaces is, you're heating up not just what the fire puts out, but you're heating up all those bricks and you hope that they capture that masonry mass, which then continually radiates it long after the fire is over.
But if you think about it, in 1725, I mean, you're really, you're almost survival, right? I mean, this is a nice house with nice windows and stuff, but I mean,
yeah,
you're on the edge of it.
And you're cooking everything here, right?
Yeah.
When you think about that, if you can get that masonry mass hot enough, so a lot of times those smaller chimneys, once they get a nice roaring fire inside of it, that actually does kick into the house and radiate throughout the whole house, especially if you've got a masonry mass big enough, that it actually lasts for way longer than we can conceptualize today, because a lot of our fireplaces are tin with brick surrounding them, or, you know, it's a
It's a metal box with brick inserts and a metal flue.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what you're talking about with that masonry mass, the metal is going to transfer that heat off into the air and it's immediately going to dissipate. But here, I mean, that brick is going to hold it for as long as it can until it's slowly dissipating it throughout the whole round of the house.
That's one of the reasons why we advocate for a masonry built fireplace, because you have a clay flue, you have the brick mass, it holds the heat better, it draws better, right? Because you've got that heat and that mass and everything else. So anyway, it's we think it's better. All right, let's go this way and then check out the rest of this. This was the new addition that modernizes the building. So if you don't want to live in an historic house, wants the modern amenities, this kind of blends them.
Totally does. The other thing, just talking with Michael about kind of this house, I think one of the things that they're doing a really good job of here versus, I think, in another type of historic home that you may potentially live in, is they're blending a lot of the technologies really well. Like if you look, this insulation that they've got here, they've built a frame, a timber frame, and then on the inside of it, they built a stick frame to then, you know, encapsulate all of this.
Well, and the build science too is that the best place to put your jacket is to wear the jacket on the outside of your body. And so then putting that wood insulation, fiber insulation on the outside is good build science. And so the walls are thicker, but as you'll see, they're not, that doesn't show up on the inside. So you're seeing different build science techniques, differentiated here, but that changes on the other side of that wall.
A lot of, because this is the marrying of the two structures. And so this is technically part of the new build, even though this is part of that old build up there. This is new directly above us. And then this is old. This is very old. One thing that we'll get to this later, but I think it's really interesting. Like, look at this fireplace. Look how shallow it is, right? But one of the things that the way these things work is the updraft is going to draw that fire up into that space. Just by the way that the fireplace is made, it creates that swirling effect that swirls that fire up and into there. So you could have a blazing fire out to here, and that negative pressure is going to pull that fire into the fireplace, even though, you know, you could build a fire out to, you know, there, and it still would suck it up, which is, it just doesn't make sense, but it works.
It's like science or something. We're standing in the second floor of the 1725 house. The original fireplace, right, on the center hall, Georgian, would have been in the middle of the house. Okay, and then fireplaces would have been in each room. There's a fireplace here. This, you'll see these lines going across there because later, they put lath across that stuff and just plastered over it.
Keeping up with the Joneses, the pattern or the trend was, you know, you had plastered walls, and so
So wood plaster would have been old fashioned, right? And the reason those panels are new is because they were hacked up. They may already still have those.
That's right, yeah.
But they were hacked up, and because they were trying to make room for the lads, and so they just took an axe to it and sucked it up.
But so one thing that's really interesting about this, you have someone's name signed right here, and that was one of the projects that our second year class was working on last year. So this is from our second year class kind of doing some historic documentation of a structure, and there's a name written right here, and they did a tracing of it, and they were trying to figure out whose name it was, and so they had a name there.
So let me ask this. You're seeing all this documentation. Was it found in this thing, or did they put it together from a bunch of different pieces?
It was found in, like, together as one.
Okay.
I don't remember what structure it was found in. Like, my question is, I don't remember if it was found from this building, from another part of this building, or from a different structure. But, yeah, this is
One of the things you do when you find historic artifacts like that and clean them up is you are documenting all of these parts and pieces so that it can go back together.
Right.
And so you draw a map, draw up the details, then mark everything so you know how it goes back.
So it, part of this thing, too, is they were doing restoration work on this, and so some of these parts and pieces needed to be remade. Here are the originals, you know, for this. That's the axe marks that Brent was talking about. That would have been this panel right here. And so that was obviously in too bad of a shape to be continued. You see, you got the lath lines on there still.
Mr. Handyman just hacked it out of there.
Yeah, exactly. The landlord special of the day.
Exactly.
But you can see, you know, we've got these giant stiles, and within them we have a Dutchman job here, Dutchman job there, Dutchman job here, up there,
so,
up there.
So here's the thing. I don't know if you know what a Dutchman is. So the Dutchman, I think it's the name from the Dutch boy putting his finger in the dike. But when I went to North Bennett Street reunion, okay, a 40-year reunion of the class. One of the big things when we were at North Bennett Street 30 plus years ago was the West System epoxy. And we kind of laughed at ourselves as a round table as we are talking, because epoxy, when we were, you know, what was that, early 1990s, was that's how you restored things. And we would have taken epoxy and filled all these things in with epoxy. Now, this Dutchman, these cuts that you see in here with these different pieces, that is the right way to restore and to do things. And so, you know, here preservation training and technology is constantly changing and moving. And so I think it's interesting.
So the Bondo.
No Bondo.
No Bondo. Honestly, Richard, working this summer, I worked on all those windows, and I was so mad anytime I found Bondo, because it would pull away from the original wood. So I'd have good, strong original wood, and I'd be picking the Bondo away, and it would be ripping out wood grain and wood fibers. And so I couldn't, you know, do this where what would have needed to be done. And it seems like, you know, what you're saying, preservation technology is constantly changing and evolving and stuff. The two things that seem to be in favor still today are reversibility. So if I make a change that's not original to the piece, I want it to be as easily reversible as possible, and then keep as much original material or like original material as possible. Mm-hmm. And so if there is an epoxy, it needs to be one that flexes and moves like wood. But if there's not going to be an epoxy, original wood would be the best replacement and solution. So the reversibility aspect we're not necessarily seeing here, but the fact that this was taken apart almost entirely to put in some of these Dutchmans, it speaks to that reversibility, that ability to just go, oh, this needs fixing. Let's just take it apart. Let's put it back together. Let's change it.
And to document for later, right?
That totally.
We can come along later and go, oh, look where they made these repairs.
100%.
The windows, okay? So basically the way, I don't know if these work. These are the windows that we went to the shop that we shot. Maybe Austin can drop in some B-roll.
Gary Naylor's shop.
And so he's got these things. Now notice what's happened. We've gone from a 12 over 12 to second floor 12 over 8.
Coming okay? down.
So what's happening is you have that, I talk about that graduated fenestration where the first floor windows are bigger than the second floor windows. This is an example of that laying out. And you'll see that in historic houses, not all the time, but a lot of the time. And so this window pane size, the way they would have made this window is they would have said, well, I need a 6x9 window, okay? 6x9 was the size of the glass, and it would be 12 over 8, 6x9 window. Whereas we would measure a window today, it's a 32 by 45, they're organized by the glass size. Why? Because glass was the, you know, expensive piece of this window. Mm. And, you know, that's what have driven the size.
Interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, it's pretty cool. Now you're also seeing that they've got these vertical boards, right? Because there's the plank framing, okay, tying into the beam here, that beam there, and the one at the bottom. So they have this rough, you know, timber frame on the outside that's pretty loosey-goosey, and then they put these boards all the way across the front, mm-hmm. and then and that's
that
your
locks
that,
it together.
Yeah, that locks
how are
it
those
together.
Boards, how are those nailed. Boards? They're just
nailed. Mm-hmm. And then
no they, joinery.
They cut it's out funny. That opening and, yeah. and attach the window frame to it.
To the planks.
To the planks.
Not to...
What?
Should we be standing in here?
Absolutely. No. Well, the irony, I don't remember, maybe Rich was talking about it a couple episodes ago, but what he was saying about... coming down. what he was saying about how an engineer doesn't know how much weight an oak peg can hold. Yeah. We don't remember, we forget very quickly... You know how sturdy some of these things are because we know steel I-beams. They have a number associated with them. We know all these different things. But you know, you go into some of these old houses and you'll see a 4x4 spanning 12 feet, and you're like,
"Uh-oh."
Well, it worked. So yeah, you know, it's
been
up for
100 years.
Yeah. But would a structural engineer trust it? No. But it does work.
So I this is Brent criticism. I hate tape. Okay?
Yeah.
It's a pretty good weather stripper for now, right? But this house never had any glue holding anything together. And so to rely on our weather stripping with tape seems to me to be like, I think they have metal flashing over top anyway. Maybe it's a
yeah, they do.
Belts and
it's a
suspenders.
Pretty wide piece hanging off the
so
top.
So it's just that's a Brent critique. Notice
that
they
may
split.
Be an inspector notice, qualification.
Oh, that could be.
Yeah,
that's probably true. So the they have splayed these jams. You see this notch in the frame where that plaster is going to come in there and wrap this corner.
Will they do ambrasia or no?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Which is what?
That's like the thing where the window kind of accordion like closes with the shutters and then accordions back into a recessed pocket for the window.
Is that like a plantation shutter?
Well, no,
maybe.
But these would fit into a panel. I don't think they've got room to do that.
Oh, I think you've done that before.
Yeah,
we on have. That big house.
Yeah. So anyway, I wanted you to see this thing. What you're seeing with all the new framing and like this framing up here, they're going to put the plaster inside there, right, and plaster these things so that you're not looking at planks. And so anyway.
So Gary Naylor made these windows. He's a great window maker. We got to visit his shop as a class. It was a lot of fun. He makes really solid, really tight windows. This is a feature that he does on his windows. That's
a peg.
It's a pin on a window or on a piece of
Sack.
Woodworking, but on timber framing, it's a peg. The fun little.
Does that get painted?
Annoying detail. Isn't that great?
You're right. That was annoying.
Good. So Robert Adam saw us making a version of these windows, and he came in, and we said, what do you think? We've got this. And he goes, so you're using a hardwood and a softwood window? I mean, historically, it's illiterate, but, it's cute. So we thought we were doing this awesome thing, and Robert just comes in and goes, yeah, historically, they never would have done this. Anyway,
it's a Gary Naylor touch.
Yeah, it's Gary Naylor touch. It's like,
I like it. It's pretty.
It's pretty, yeah. There's no getting around it, but it's very funny that Robert was like, cute.
Does that just get painted over, though?
Bless your heart. Isn't that cute?
It might. Yeah. It just...
Okay, let's go look over here.
Okay. So this next room we're going into is one of my favorite rooms in this house. Oh, also, before we leave this room, really quick, if you look at even the scarf joint that they've done on these timbers that they've got here, they continued that lamb's tongue over over across it. Traditionally, this would have been scarfed like we saw at Rich's shop, the two pieces that intersect
interlock
together. But I don't know why they ended up doing it that way.
So the other thing you'll notice is that we'll put a corner bead on the outside of our things. This is why we do that, right? We'll make that little pencil mold. But they had a beading plane like the one we played with the other day.
Yep.
And that's how they would have made that bead on the edge of these columns, with a beading plane.
It's called a summer beam.
And they're just dressing it up a little bit, right? They're just putting a little touch on it. Sometimes it's chamfered. This time it's beaded.
You think about a lot of those old homes, they would have just had a regular square column or beam running through the center of their house. And so, what do we do with our ceilings, we had crown molding up there, and so this is that early, early version of crown.
This is your favorite room?
It is.
Tell me why.
This is gonna be a bedroom.
Okay.
So it's just a really small, nice, old room.
It's a cozy room.
It's a cozy
tons
room.
Tons of light.
Got a nice fireplace, tons of light on both sides. I love this beam right here, you know? King Post
you
Truss.
You hate timber framing.
We're talking about a King's Post Truss. This is one of them. So what's happening here is that beam is actually not resting into this piece here. It's actually holding that up. So as weird as it is, that beam is pulling upwards on this beam. That's actually a post. When they're vertical, they're called a post.
It's not pulling it up. It's at least locking it in so that this isn't sagging.
Unfortunately, it's pulling it up. as strange as that might feel.
But if you've got spread on your walls,
exactly,
that's not pulling up.
Exactly. Your walls would be spreading if not for this beam. So this beam is holding the walls together, which in turn is forcing, because these can't go outwards, their only force is inwards on each other, which actually is holding this upwards. I know it sounds really crazy. They drew physics diagrams.
No, I agree. It is holding it up.
Yeah. The reason, like otherwise, if it wasn't, you wouldn't need this peg here that's in the middle of this thing. The other fun feature in this room are these things. They're called dragon's beams right here. It's a tying feature helping capture that diagonal hip piece of this timber frame together. That is what this is landing on. And so this is holding this together. A lot of forces at play in this thing, but it leaves behind this really nice, elegant outward thing. And you see in a lot of old timber frame structures, they sometimes carve these and they look like a dragon's helm.
Dragon's
helm? It's a dragon's beam. That's the...
Cool.
Anyway, but you know, you imagine bed goes here, little bedside tables.
Notice the siding on the outside is now horizontal. It's not vertical like the other stuff. Look at the profile of that window. Okay, so if you just look at this mutton bar, right? This is a typical Greek Revival, sharp, angled, steep.
Probably way thinner.
Yeah, 5/8 of an inch. And then compared to those, which you have a wider mutton bar, not as deep. Anyways, just I think that's cool stuff, right? Yeah. And these are all small little things that help you date it and help you kind of put it together. But this is cool.
Yeah.
The other thing that you'll see, they're building that fireplace up. This one's already in place and already through the roof. The brick size is smaller. We're going to go downstairs and look, but you'll see these two beautiful arches that are supporting these, massive chimneys.
Massive.
Which is really cool.
Again, really shallow firebox for this chimney. You can imagine just a big roaring fire here just running along that. It's gonna get sucked up. They've got gas line in there, so they probably won't ever do wood fire, but it has the capability to do that. And it wasn't a cook fire. We know that because there isn't a pintle anywhere up here for them to hang their, I don't know what it's called, but there's not a pintle in there to help hang their cook pot and all the other stuff. So that's that. Shall we away to the downstairs, or should we go through the new structure just to?
Can we?
So this is that in-law apartment. They're kind of prepping to finish everything off in here. One of the interesting things, we were talking about build science. This is that Steico board. I believe this is coming from a company in Maine. It's all that wood fiber, it's glue, it's fire resistant, it's bug resist, it's got all the things. But this is a thermal break. That's what you're seeing here with this little cap to go over that thing. It's a thermal break, so your metal screw would be transferring cool air or hot air to the outside. When you pop this on it, now that plastic barrier is putting a layer in between the cool outside screw that's getting hot or cold.
Can't imagine that would be transferring that much.
Looking at your face,
I know.
Like.
Well, I had the exact same reaction.
They're trying to create thermal breaks. I believe the technology. Yeah. It just seems like that wouldn't.
I couldn't agree more. I had the exact same response, and I was like, "What?" And they said, apparently, because of how many screws are going to go into this wall, and any wall that you may do,
you add them up.
Yeah, exactly. And so
it's a 1 foot hole.
You know, it's this tiny thing, but it becomes a really
big. That's where build science just this is a Brent thing. It's like too much.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like really. And so, you know, they try to hit these numbers and do these things and they chase down screw heads. And it's just like, I think we're far enough. I think they've done enough build science technology. This is an efficient house.
Right.
And if you want to know my Jacksonism on what you just said, is if that gets them to be able to do a single pane wood window, I'll take it all day long.
I'd do that too.
Yeah.
So
amen to that.
I don't really care about the, you know, screw heads, but if it means another wooden window,
that's a good point.
I'm really happy.
Yeah. So we're in the basement. Now you're starting to see not only build science, but just kind of the, you know, modern construction pieces mixed with the old, right? So there's that beautiful arch. These massive granite, you know, posts that are sitting in here. Notice how it holds up this oak piece that holds up that piece that holds up a piece going through here. So it is engineered really well. This is where I look at this house. I see they're hard duct wrapped. I see the venting that they're doing. I see the concrete walls, the energy efficiency. And I'm just like, this is awesome, because this is the way an old house, living in an old house, should be. You have all the modern conveniences, yet you have the charm and the craftsmanship of this historic house.
So this, we were here the day that they were bringing these steel or these granite posts into this basement. And, you know, prior to there being a beautiful brick archway here, there was a void, you know, straight up into the second floor.
It was just an open hole.
It was just a crazy day because they had a steel I-beam running across the top of this thing and a chain ratioed pulley that they, you know, strapped these giant pieces to. And they're just, and every like pull and the would get you like 2 inches. And so it was like, Michael's just, and the thing is just slowly going down, and they got him into the basement, and obviously it created this beautiful brick archway that's holding up all of the chimney that runs straight through to the ceiling, which is crazy.
Yeah, and see how the brick is bonded, that you've got this English bond where you've got all the headers going across and then the runners. Again, just...
English bond referring to the way that the brick is interlocked together from one course on the outside to the next course to the inside.
I think it's just, it's pretty wide. So this is an awesome thing. There's another big fireplace back this way. And let's go back here so they can look at those doors.
Just as we're on the brick topic, this is one Michael actually hand-fired, my second year instructor hand-fired these bricks to make this brick arch coming over here. And then this leads up to that kitchen mass that we saw in that bedroom that we were in. Now moving over here, they're freshly lead scraping a lot of this stuff. That's why you're seeing the M95 and the or not M95, the full-on respirators and whatever things. But this is these scraped doors. Those are freshly scraped, it looks like. And it looks like those mantle surrounds have been freshly scraped.
What you're seeing, these are all Greek Revival millwork. How do you know? Because of this molding right here, okay, that shape, okay. But look how simple these are, okay. Greek Revival doors either are 2-panel or 3-panel like this. Look how wide these styles are. That's probably a little over 6 inches. That one's probably 9 or 10 inches wide, right? And so you've got these massive blocky stone-like millwork pieces, and then look how simple that fireplace is, right? That would have been one that would have gone upstairs. Not really meant to be showy, but you are still seeing a lot of the same kind of detailing that we saw in the front entry. These flat plain pieces, very modern, very clean lined. And so you're looking at original millwork here, all in white pine.
Not only that, if you look at the mantle that's directly behind Richard, the ginormous, essentially, frieze of that panel is another Greek Revival indicator. All right, so that was the house. Really cool, 3 different houses put together. Thanks, it's starting to rain, so I'm gonna get out of here quick. Thanks for watching this episode of the Passion for Craft podcast. We'll see you next time.